Hello and welcome to the Auburn Medical Group podcast for May 2009. I'm your host, Dr. Mark Vaughn. Today I'd like to talk about exertional heat illness. You may know other forms of heat illness, for example, having heard of heat stroke or even exertional heat stroke. I want to steer a little bit away from classic heat stroke, which is mainly an illness of people who are elderly and debilitated with multiple medical problems or on certain medications, and focus more on exertional heat illness. This is something we see in the younger age set, people who are active and outdoors doing things in the heat, possibly not when they're acclimated. I'd like to get started right away by talking about the major factors involved in exertional heat illness: acclimatization, hydration status, clothing, the heat and humidity, signs and symptoms, and treatment. Starting with acclimatization, generally it's thought that it takes about 10 days for an adult to adjust to the heat, and that's for a given amount of physical exertion. So if a person is in the heat but not exerting themselves, and then they go out and play a game on the weekends, they're going to be subject to heat-related illness, or could very well be. You need to be doing whatever activity it is in that temperature for about 10 days before you can really say that your body's acclimated. And we'll get more into what that means as we talk about hydration. Hydration is an issue because the body uses water, the plasma volume in the bloodstream, to adjust temperature and to regulate the temperature in different parts of the body. If you don't have enough fluid because you're losing it all through sweat, that's a problem. We decrease the amount of sweat it takes to control the temperature through acclimatization, and that's why that's important. Also, the amount of sodium in sweat decreases as a person gets acclimated. That is why we see commercials on television for electrolyte-containing sport drinks, because they tell us we need to get it in us, that referring to what's being lost in the sweat. So you see these commercials with the glowing orange fluid dripping out of people's pores as they're playing sports, telling us we need to get that in us. We do have risk for losing sodium as we sweat, particularly if we're not acclimated to the activity or the temperature. But it's not as big a deal as the television commercials would make it seem. Most people will do fine after having an episode of sweating, going out and playing a game in the summer when they're not necessarily acclimated, just simply through the sodium in their diet, in the food they eat that day and the next day. Clothing matters when you're exercising. We want to avoid clothing that is impermeable or covering up so much of the skin that we can't have transfer of temperature from the body or skin, the sweat, into the air. One of the areas that you may not be aware of being a problem is the top of the head. So much energy transfer occurs there that if somebody's wearing a hat all the time, that can actually cause them to be more at risk for heat-related illness than if they're not wearing it. Heat and humidity are very much the main risk factor for heat-related illness. Heat is just simply the ambient temperature, humidity, percent humidity in the air on a day that you're doing an activity. These are measured by something called the wet bulb globe temperature, which takes into account both the ambient temperature and the humidity. It's measured in degrees Fahrenheit. A wet bulb globe temperature in the 80s warns us that we need to be cautious. We need to be more vigilant about staying hydrated, wearing less clothing, limiting the hours we're working out or playing, and adjusting the time of day that we're doing the activity. The wet bulb globe temperature can be found on certain websites if you do searches for it to find out if it's getting up into the 80s. High 80s, that's time that most people need to be avoiding even being involved in activity outdoors that involves any significant exertion. Certainly when it gets up to 90, as a doctor, I have to recommend that the activity stop. To summarize some of these things in a little different form, going over risk factors for exertional heat illness, certainly there's the functional or physiologic, including dehydration, poor physical fitness, lack of acclimatization, obesity, age, fatigue or pregnancy. Conditions that affect it are the hot climate, carrying a heavy load, having inadequate rest periods, wearing impermeable clothing or insulated materials, missing meals, you're not getting your sodium there. Diseases that can contribute to it: central nervous system lesions, sweat gland dysfunction, infectious disease, diabetes mellitus, skin disorders or diarrhea, drugs that people take that can be drugs of abuse or alcohol or even caffeine or energy drinks. Medications can be a terrible problem, particularly in classic heat stroke in the elderly. Many medications make people vulnerable to that. A lot of psychiatric medicines and diuretics If you're on medications, check with your doctor or pharmacist before it gets too hot here to find out if that's going to be a problem in situations where you may not be able to get cooled off or you're going to be active. Also, psychological stress, over-motivation or peer pressure. This is what we see in military recruits or in athletes in sports with their coaches having them exercise in the summer. Thankfully, this is becoming less and less a problem. But it's to the point now with the knowledge we have about heat-related illness. If a coach is having the kids practice on a day that's too hot, it's now considered criminally negligent. So we hope that that won't be an issue, but I want my listeners to be aware of it in case they run into a problem with that. I'd be glad to talk to them more about it. The symptoms to look out for heat-related illness include a flushed face, hyperventilation, headache, dizziness, nausea, tingling arms, goosebumps, chilliness, incoordination, and confusion. The confusion is quite a problem, though, because the person with the confusion does not recognize it or have the wherewithal to get out of the heat. And another problem is that as people are on the verge of heat-related illness, they can actually feel euphoria, a pleasant, good feeling that all the more contributes to them not getting out of the heat and taking care of themselves. The things that need to be done when these symptoms are felt is to place the victim in the shade, remove restrictive clothing or as much clothing as you can, apply a large amount of water onto them, and keep the skin wet while trying to fan it. That promotes evaporation, which is a great way to transfer heat energy from their body and back into the environment. Then we need to evacuate them to the nearest medical facility if they don't turn around immediately with that. There's things that can be done, things that are checked in the blood, ways of giving fluids that if they're throwing it up, we can keep them in if we do it through an IV. We can check their temperature and actually see where they are. Not just an oral temperature here. It actually needs to be tracked with a rectal probe thermometer to know what their core temperature is, because that's where people get in trouble with elevated core temperature, particularly if we're getting up around 104 degrees. That seems to be the figure that's used most often as a place where cooling measures need to be done at an extreme extent. I hope you found this information useful as we get into May and the summer and physical activity that we may not be used to doing in the heat. As you do, remember these pointers. If you have any questions, you can write to us. Writing to the podcast is at the address podcast@vaughnmd.com. That's podcast@vaughnmd.com. Thank you for listening. We look forward to doing it again soon. This is Dr. Mark Vaughn saying, stay in good health.